Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America College podcast along with Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. We're proud to announce that this week's College Baseball podcast and this season's College Baseball podcast are sponsored by Project Lomo, an innovative program designed to get young baseball fans around the country to channel their passion for the sport into creative ways to improve their community. We'll have more details later about Project Lomo when it's officially launched in early May. Aaron, I'm really excited about our new podcast sponsor. I look forward to busting it all out when the conference season's coming down the home stretch and regionals are getting ready to be announced. We'll really step up our podcast sponsorship at that time. But we've passed the midway point now, Aaron, and the college season. There's a lot more meat on the bones, and we still can't tell everything. You know, some teams have played the tougher part of their conference schedule than others. But I think it's fair to say that here at the midway point, Aaron, we're starting to see some separation, especially in this week's rankings. It feels like the top, I'd say, eight teams have been in our top 10 for a decent amount of time, and they don't look like they're going anywhere.
Yeah, you're right. And I feel like there's definitely, to me, there's a group of elite teams here at the top that I think you're right. They've separated themselves from everybody else. I think North Carolina, Vanderbilt, LSU, Fullerton, those guys are clearly elite. You have to throw UVA in at this point because they've been so consistent. And then Oregon State, and to me, that was a huge weekend for the Beavers to go down to UCLA and take 2 out of 3. I still have some reservations about Florida State, but, they keep on winning as they always do.
Hashtag respect.
Yep.
They've been very good.
They obviously deserve to be in this discussion, but, if gun to my head, I still think there's a gap between them and those other teams above them. And Louisville actually is a team that I think is just about, Louisville and Indiana both, I think, are really top-tier teams also. I think it's a strong group. Now Arkansas is starting to play, over the last few weeks, they're playing once again like the preseason top 10 team we thought they were. And now they're back in the top 10. And then you've got Oklahoma and South Carolina. So, I still think, I guess you've got a dozen teams here that are pretty good. But those teams at the top, especially to me, really stand out.
Starting to get some of those teams are starting to get into Denny Green territory. I agree with you, Aaron. Let's just work our way down our current top six. No changes in our rankings this week. North Carolina took a loss this week last Monday to Clemson, but came back from that 5-1 week. And this North Carolina team, I feel like we've talked about a decent amount about them. They actually had a little adversity this week with Chaz Frank, their senior leadoff man and center fielder, experiencing a hamstring issue, so he missed a couple games. It didn't really seem to bother them. They've cruised, even though their third starter, Hobbs Johnson, he had an injury issue earlier in the year, and he still doesn't even have a decision here through 7 weeks.
Hmm.
But it still feels like the separating factors for North Carolina have been that 1-2 punch, the top of the rotation in Emmanuel and Moss, and this middle of the lineup, this 3-4-5 of Moran, Bolt, and Stubbs that's been incredibly productive. And then that bullpen depth, which now really seems like they've gotten a real boost from their freshman right-hander,
Trent Thornton, right.
Trent Thornton, thank you. Tyler Thornton's a Duke basketball guard. I think I should not make that mistake as a person in North Carolina.
Well, the thing that stands out to me about the Tar Heels that I guess is a little bit of a surprise is just how offensive they've been.
Yeah.
And you nailed it with Moran, Stubbs, and Bolt in the middle especially. But, they're pretty good up and down the lineup. Obviously, when you've got Frank at the top and, Michael Russell's a good player. Landon Lassiter's had a good year. And,
yeah.
They always get contributions from Brian Holberton's had a good year. From the guys like him and Parks Jordan and – those nice kind of complimentary corner pieces that they've got. It's just there are no easy outs in the lineup. They grind you up and down, and they've got thump in the middle. And I think we thought they would be a pretty good offensive team, a better offensive team than they were last year, but they're much better even than we expected, I think.
I think that's a great way to put it. We thought they'd be good, but they've been better. Stubbs has 43 RBIs right now. He's hitting over 400. And yesterday, Colin Moran swung the bat once, basically. He's got 31 walks this year, and he also got dosed yesterday. And the one time he's won the bat, he hit it about 375 feet down the right field line. It was a pretty majestic, no-doubt home run. And as usual, they have their depth of left-handed hitters off the bench, and Mike Fox is not afraid to mix and match and to pinch hit and to go to that bench. So they have depth, and then Trent Thornton, you know, Aaron. You have to. The reason I wanted to ask you about Thornton, yesterday was my first time seeing him. He's given up 3 earned runs all year. He's now 7-0 with an 0-6 ERA. Plus, he got a save this weekend. It seems like he's kind of becoming their moment of truth guy on the weekends. I didn't remember that he was this big a part of their freshman class. It really feels like, you know, Bolt and Dunbar and Lassiter were the feature guys there, and now he's really become almost as vital as those other guys as a freshman arm.
You're right, and he was a little bit under the radar in that freshman class. And, you know, I remember when I saw Coach Forbes in Houston, he was talking this guy up, you know, saying he's going to be a pretty key piece here. And it sounds like now they want to keep him in the bullpen going forward rather than, you know, they had him in that midweek role, and he was very good in that role. But I think they think he's too valuable to have on weekends. And so they like the fact that he can – influence multiple games and on the weekends and be that moment of truth guy, like you said. And it's good stuff. I mean, it's firm and it's funky.
Yeah.
And he competes, and you know, he might wind up being, you know, kind of what they thought that Trevor Kelly would be, or, you know, that kind of role, that really versatile piece in the bullpen.
I think he might, and I think you know, the key there is that from this weekend, not so much they beat Maryland, is that Thornton went back-to-back games. He saved the game Saturday. Then he pitched 4-plus innings, 4 1/3 on Sunday. And John Sheff, the Maryland coach, said that he had talked to his team about Thornton's toughness, what stood out to him, that he came in at a tight spot, got out of some tight spots, and then in the 8th inning, North Carolina had used his DH and moved Landon Lassiter from DH to shortstop, so Thornton had to hit. And he lined a two-strike single up the middle. I mean, he almost Charlie Brown, the pitcher for Maryland. So the toughness is what stands out for Thornton. I think that North Carolina is a team that does have a fair amount of toughness to go with its talent, and fair in the good sense of that. I mean, I think they're long on toughness. Pretty legit number one team. I feel like all of our teams at the top of these rankings, Aaron, are pretty legit. I mean, none of these teams in our top five have lost a series all year. Vanderbilt goes on the road and gets it done with pitching the first 2 games at Ole Miss, and then with some grit and just enough offense and an extra inning win on Sunday. Did you learn more about Vanderbilt this weekend or more about Ole Miss in this series?
You know, I would say more about Vanderbilt only because, you know, they went on the road and swept that series in a tough atmosphere. I mean, I think Ole Miss right now is still looking for their identity, and so I'm still looking for their identity too. I feel like I don't know that much about Ole Miss. I feel like they're not who we thought they were early in the season, because their pitching hasn't been elite. You know, it's Bobby Wall, still been Bobby Wall, but Mike Myers hasn't been great on Saturdays. And, you know, we thought Chris Ellis was going to be this really good Sunday guy, and that hasn't happened. Now they put Sam Smith back on Sunday, and it still hasn't happened for him. You know, and then they haven't been scoring runs. I mean, they're just right now, they don't look very impressive. And we still have them kind of stuck there at the back of the top 25, but they've lost 3 straight weekends. And all of a sudden, they don't really feel like a top 25 team. We just don't have anyone else better to put in there.
Right. And to me, it's the part about that, like you said, with Vanderbilt that's so impressive is, you know, Ole Miss, there's a little desperation there because, like you said, they'd already lost back-to-back series. They played 2 tough games, and Vanderbilt wins a couple of games close late with, you know, 10,000 fans in the seats. And then Sunday, obviously, a smaller crowd. You know, Ole Miss rallies a tie in the 9th, you know, off Brian Miller, who's been pretty fantastic all year. And Vanderbilt doesn't give up the ghost in that game either. They still come back to win it in extra innings. So the toughness factor for Vanderbilt was pretty high this weekend. I feel like their toughness quotient was high this weekend because I do feel like there had to be a little desperation there with Ole Miss. But Vanderbilt seems, Aaron, like a team that's, you know, their pitching depth is just pretty impressive. I think that's the other thing that stands out to me from afar is that Tyler Beede has made the leap. I don't know, the week in, week out, he pitches like a first-round pick necessarily, but he pitches like a really good SEC starter week in, week out. And that's what he didn't do last year as a freshman.
The weird thing about him is he's still walking a bunch of guys. Every week it's like five or six walks.
Every week. It doesn't seem like it matters who the umpire is.
No, I mean, I still wonder if that's going to catch up with him at some point. But right now, I mean, he doesn't give up any runs. He's not giving up very many hits. You know, he's clearly got the grit going. We know his stuff has been very good. So, you know, yes, he's definitely made that leap from where he was last year to where he is now. But I also agree that he's not yet elite because he just still has too many guys on base. I think that's still a little bit of a concern.
I'm with you. Sooner or later, the numbers catch up to you there. You just can't walk that many guys as a consistent matter of pitching. But I guess you can get away with it when you only give up three extra base hits. It just feels like you never see him get hit hard. It's always the walks when he gets in any trouble. But
right.
Elite pitching, Aaron, that's what you really see at LSU at number three. For a program that's won, six national championships?
Yes,
five under Skip Bourbon and then one under Palmieri. It is pretty hard to set records when you're at a program that has won six national championships, and yet this LSU team has done that with a 30-2 start, best start in school history. That's pretty amazing. And 11-1 in the SEC for the first time, tied with Vanderbilt at 11-1 atop the SEC. 1-2 punch, Eads and Nola. Again, Eads is the other guy, Aaron, who's I know it wasn't a freshman last year, but it was really his first full, healthy year. A guy with a lot of promise who was good early. I mean, he was better than Beattie last year. But really a guy who's gone from good and talented and could be, you know, could flash it to just week in and week out. That guy gives his team a great chance to win, and he's been pretty outstanding. And put him together with Nola, and you have a great 1-2 punch.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then the other key this weekend was they got a good start on Sunday from Cody Glenn, who's been a little up and down in that Sunday role. But he went six strong innings, I believe, only one run against Kentucky. And, you know, that's a pretty complete team when you get your Sunday guy performing well, because that's the only issue, I think, for them. And they're sitting here at 30-2. I mean, they're just, you know, the way they're winning is very impressive. They just destroyed Kentucky. I mean, they killed them in three games.
They destroyed Kentucky, them, like you said. They this was a team that had not – Kentucky hadn't been dominant this year, but they'd been very consistent, very good. You come at you with those three lefties as you detailed. That's just not an easy team to make look bad, and it just seems like LSU made them look bad.
They did, and I think it was a bad matchup for Kentucky because LSU was very right-handed in the lineup, and they got really good right-handed hitters. You know, I mean, Bregman and Rhymes, and you know, all these guys are—they're dangerous. You know, Mason Katz, of course, is a force of nature. I mean, this lineup, and then Jacoby Jones got it going this weekend too, which was a nice boost. We kind of have been waiting for that, and you know, he had a good weekend. So LSU's offense is very complete. You know, they're just—I don't know what else to say. They're really good. I mean, you know, I know the LSU fans are going to ride us because we don't have them number one. You know, and I know they're 30-2 and they're 11-1 in the league, but there's three, four teams at the top here that all have a strong case for number one, and there's no way you can move North Carolina or Vanderbilt down.
I'll say this for LSU's case for number one, Aaron. This is by far the best series they've had this year.
Yes.
Kentucky's the best team they've played this year, and the rest of their schedule's not been that strong. You have a common opponent with Maryland. They swept Maryland at home. North Carolina swept Maryland at home. John Scheff, I actually asked him after the game, you know, he said that North Carolina was the best team they've played since LSU. You know, he didn't, when I asked him to compare those two teams, he kind of demurred even off the record. He just said, you know, North Carolina's the best offensive team we've seen since LSU. Then he got off on a Colin Moran tangent about how Colin Moran is exactly the way you drop a big league third baseman, and he was really complimentary of Moran's defense. Which I will say Sunday, Colin Moran, despite the fact that his feet he's not nimble. He doesn't look nimble anyway, but he gets it done. But I would say that North Carolina's schedule's actually been a little bit, they're at least comparable, if not a little tiny bit stronger. LSU's conference series, other than Kentucky and Mississippi State, were Auburn and Missouri, two of the bottom feeders in the SEC. And they swept Washington. You know, UW has not been good this year. Brown. I'd say that's what works against LSU the most in that argument is the schedule strength.
Yeah,
I'm not
I guess
saying North
so.
Carolina's is great. I'm just saying to jump over the preseason number one team that has exactly the same record you do, basically 29-2, 30-2. You got to bring a little bit more to the table. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with that certainly. But I mean, if I'm looking at their schedules, I don't think there's much difference. I mean, North Carolina has also kind of had, you know, some of the softer teams in its league with Wake Forest and Boston College, and you know, Miami's not great. You know, they took 2 out of 3 against Clemson. That's their best series win so far, really. Miami. But I mean, Miami and Clemson, neither of those teams has been ranked all year long. I mean, at least LSU has beaten, you know, went on the road and beat Mississippi State, and then they swept a, you know, top 10 team in Kentucky. So
yeah, North Carolina's only comparable series. It was the weekend they went to Houston and just beat Rice, dismantled A&M, beat Cal. I mean, Cal's not been a great team this year, and A&M and Rice, you know, Rice is ranked, but those are single game. But it was a convincing weekend. But that's really the only thing that. I'm not saying North Carolina's schedule has been better, because it hasn't, but LSU's hasn't been special. This was the first weekend, really, to me, where LSU was completely, utterly. This was their best weekend. It wasn't the first weekend of anything, but it was their best weekend, and a very convincing weekend for the Tigers. And 30-2 is pretty phenomenal.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, taking nothing away from the Tigers. Speaking of taking nothing away from, in terms of schedule, Aaron, number 4, Cal State Fullerton, has been really ridiculous. I mean, they got a breather this weekend with UC Davis, and they kind of seemed like they played like it. They didn't bust out a 25-0 on anybody like they did last week on Pacific. But,
yeah.
I mean, the Titans they haven't done anything poorly all year.
Yeah, they've been really good, so consistent. I mean, you talk about those two freshmen, just keep on doing it. I mean, that's 58 innings now without a walk for Thomas Eshelman. It's just
crazy.
Insane. It's insane. I mean, I was talking about it with John Savage in his office on Sunday, and he was just marveling. I mean, how is this possible? This guy goes 58 innings. You don't have one, you know, 3-2 pitch, maybe just a little outside. You know, you don't have one of those in 8 weeks. I mean, come on. It's insane. It's insane.
It's really crazy.
But, and Garza's been so good as well, and Graham Weiss was good this weekend. And he's been generally pretty good. I mean, it's a solid rotation. They just keep on doing it week after week, and they're hitting, and they're older, and they're just, you know, they're the Titans. They're just being the Titans is what they're doing.
Aaron, they haven't lost a series all year. Just looking at their schedule, I mean, the rest of the Big West seems like it's kind of beating each other up. Their next 2 weekends should be challenging. UC Santa Barbara at home, and then at Cal Poly. So they've got, you know, those two teams have just – Santa Barbara and Cal Poly just played the last two of the last 3 weekends, and they split those games. Those are competitive teams. It's always tough to focus when you go on the road to Hawaii. But it doesn't feel like, looking at the rest of the schedule, there are a lot of losses left on Fullerton's schedule.
No. They're clearly the best team in the Big West by a wide margin, I think.
Are they best team in the West, period?
I think it's them and the Beavers. And I don't, you know, I don't know if it's clear which one of those teams is better. I kind of like Oregon State's pitching depth. I probably like Oregon State better, really, gun to my head. But, I mean, it's close. You can make an argument either way.
Yeah, those are two great teams, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the Beavers in just a second, since you saw them in person. But, and then UVA kind of just doing what UVA does. I mean, you know, Wake Forest, like you said, bottom of the ACC team. It's a shame that we have to wait till the end of the regular season, Aaron, for North Carolina and Virginia to play each other. I mean, obviously there are other good teams in the ACC, with Florida State, Georgia Tech, NC State are all ranked. Duke rising up this weekend and winning a series at home, giving up only 2 runs all weekend to Georgia Tech. I mean, I think that was one of the bigger stories in the country. But
that was stunning.
That was really that. Is that the most surprising series result of the whole year? Maybe non-UC Central Arkansas at Mississippi State. That might be the most surprising series result of the whole season.
Georgia Tech hadn't been shut out twice in one weekend since 1955.
Are you kidding?
And this particular Georgia Tech team, I mean, come on, they were scoring 10 runs a game for the first like 6 weeks of the year. I mean, all of a sudden they scored, you know, they get shut out twice and score 2 runs in 3 games. What's going on there? That's just bizarre.
And the crazy thing is, you know, it's not like teams haven't scored some runs against Duke. You know, Duke held Miami down, but then the next weekend they played Virginia Tech, and Virginia Tech scored 20-plus runs in the weekend series. And they gave up some runs to Clemson and losing that series. But, man, to shut out Georgia Tech like that is unbelievable. And you know, now they're going to Florida State next weekend, Duke is. That's going to be interesting to see if they can translate some of that pitching success on the road, because Duke is, you know, right now they're right in the thick of the regional race, which is not expected. And what's their last regional, 1965?
I think that's right.
It's either 65 or 61. You wrote it so many times that one year recently, it got burned into my head. But Virginia, again, I mean, just they're just automatic. It's amazing to me with that coaching staff is that consistent. They'll wrap up their series with Wake Forest tonight on ESPNU. And Aaron, you saw the Beavers. You saw the new logo. You saw the new contract. Well, you didn't see the contract, but newly extended Pat Casey. It just seemed like a couple of years ago where there was all this retirement talk with Pat Casey, and they'd been a little bit inconsistent. This team just looks like a machine. We've talked about it all year. It just don't seem like they have a real weak point.
Well, if they have a weak point, it's, you know, I mean, their defense isn't outstanding when Tyler Smith isn't the shortstop.
Right.
But, you know, he's supposed to – I think he's going to be fully cleared by next weekend. They expect, and he came in for defense this weekend, and as soon as he came in to shortstop, it's like the light clicked on, and the entire team plays with so much more confidence. I mean, Andy Peterson's a very good second baseman, but he's not a shortstop at this level. And you know, you put him at second, and you put Smith at short, and all of a sudden, you know, it's just, you can just tell they play with more confidence, and they're better. You know, you put Jake Rodriguez behind the plate. You know, it's that to me, that's the one key for them. I mean, Tyler Smith's their best all-around player. I mean, Conforto's their best hitter, but Tyler Smith's their best player. And they need him to be healthy. And right now he's, you know, he was still kind of – the couple of times he came up to the plate this weekend, he knew he was going to bunt because that's all he's really cleared to do. So, you know, but, I mean, they're so deep on the mound. And you know, it was good to see Ben Wetzler pitch well, and I got my first look at Andrew Moore, and he was very good on Saturday. You know, true four pitch guy up to 92, and good slider, and you know, competes for freshman, pitched well above his years. I like the bullpen too. I mean, that's the thing. You know, Scott Schultz is a legit closer back there. I mean, it's 88 to 93 with some real sink power, you know, life to it. And they got pieces from the left side and the right side. I mean, Engelbrecht, kind of the sidearm lefty, and then the submarining righty Jackson, and, you know, Dan Child in there, and Taylor Starr is up to 93 and with a good slider. And it's just like they got all these pieces. And then Jace Fry is close to coming back. So.
Better find a spot for Jace Fry. Not going to be easy. A lot of competition in the middle of that Oregon State rotation. It's the Baseball America podcast with John Mayo and Oregon. Aaron Fitt. I'm sorry, Aaron. We lost you there for a second. What was that?
Well, I don't know where I was exactly.
That's okay. We'll move on. I wanted to ask you, you know, the big thing to me about Oregon State was they lose on Friday, and just the toughness to come back and win a series on the road when you've lost that Friday game. It's just, it feels like it's so much easier when you win that Friday game. But UCLA, the other part of this is that, you know, you mentioned Oregon State's pitching. UCLA, even in the game they won, they only had six hits. I thought the Bruins' offense, I expected a little bit more out of them this weekend, even against Oregon State. What's kind of the state of the Bruins' offense?
I think it's just not a great offense. I mean, they just it's hard to lose all those guys they lost last year and not miss a beat. And that's why it's amazing. Like Florida State has done,
right?
But because, you know, Florida State had comparable losses, and they just keep on doing it. But this UCLA team isn't very offensive. I mean, they're just not. You know, you got Pat Vilekas, your cleanup guy, and he's a nice college hitter. But if he's your best hitter, I don't know. I mean, you know, Kevin Kramer in the three hole, he can swing the bat pretty well. But I mean, Eric Filia has been a disappointment. Hasn't gotten it going. We thought he'd have a really nice year coming off that big North Woods League season. Hasn't happened for him. You know, I mean, I don't know. Shane Zeal hasn't really gotten it going either. I mean, these guys are talented, and they just haven't really taken off yet. I mean, Brian Carroll has been a nice spark for them, but they don't scare you on offense. They just don't. They need to take better at bats. I mean, the quality of their bats this weekend was disappointing for John Savage, and you know, I think they're not going to be a great offensive team. I mean, they should be better than they are a little bit, but even when they're at peak capacity, they're not going to be anywhere near what they were last year offensively, because they were old last year. I mean, and now they're not. They're young and in a bunch of spots.
It really is kind of that simple. I mean, when you have the guy, that's why the guys like Bregman and Bolt have been so impressive, because we've become used to this new reality where most freshmen don't come in and rake from day one anymore. Not as easy. And it's kind of amazing to look at the Pac-10 stats and just Pac-12 stats, I'm sorry. And you know, Oregon State, by far the most complete team in this league. They're third in the league in runs. They lead the league in ERA by 3/4 of a run. I mean, their ERA is 184 as a team. It's the O-State Ballers, and it feels like the O-State Ballers and kind of everyone else in the Pac-12 this year. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Aaron, we had quite a bit of movements in the rest of the rankings. Don't want to get too much into all that nitty-gritty, because we're really kind of – basically, it feels like after that top 7, 8, 9 teams, Aaron, we're kind of spinning our wheels with the rest of the rankings, the rest of the countries. Just kind of, I mean, there's incredible churn at the back of the rankings, but it really feels as after the top 8, 9, it's churn city after that.
Yeah, and you've had, you know, your Indiana, it's been kind of a steady riser ever since it got into the rankings and had that 18-game winning streak. And I've been, you know, like I said, I think in the last couple of weeks, I think Indiana is a legit contender. I mean, I think they're really good and a complete team. But you know, and now you've got Arkansas and South Carolina kind of, you know, like I said before, they're kind of bouncing back up the rankings here. And you know, those guys were preseason top 10 teams, and they're, you know, they're kind of reasserting themselves. But you know, after that, you're right. I mean, Kentucky just got swept in emphatic fashion. Rice has just been kind of, you know, plugging along here, winning every weekend ever since the Minute Maid thing, but they're not sweeping people, you know, and their league isn't great, you know, and I'd like to see them sweep some more of these teams.
Right.
You know, I mean, they don't blow me away. Arizona State has been up and down. I mean, they've had huge problems on Sunday. They're thin on the mound. I don't love their team. I mean, I actually like Oregon's team probably the most out of this group, but they've played 3 series this year against really good teams, and they lost all 3 of them.
That's it.
I mean, they haven't gotten swept, but they're not beating the really good teams that they play. And it's not enough just to play them. You got to beat them. So, you know, eventually I think Oregon will, you know, they're going to be higher than this. I think they're, to me, they're the second best team in the Pac-12 after Oregon State. But you're right. I mean, there's a bunch of churn here. There's a bunch of teams that are kind of beating up on each other. And, you know, you look at the SEC. Now we've got Mississippi State and Ole Miss at the back of the rankings. They've both been, you know, up and then down. And then, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's hard to find 25 worthy teams for the rankings. And that's how you wind up with a Campbell at number 25.
It has been a challenge to find consistent teams. I think maybe that's the best way to say it. I think it's always a challenge to be consistent when you have, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. Let's talk about some of the teams that were rewarded, and then we'll wrap up the podcast. And there's some ACC teams crowded in here at the back here, and NC State and Clemson are the teams that come in here this weekend. NC State, you know, they have the series sweep at UVA when they fell out of the rankings. That seemed like that's when they kind of bottomed out. Since then, they've won 8 out of 9. They've got Trey Turner healthy. Probably not a more important player in the country than Trey Turner.
Right.
You know, their pitching still hasn't – it's still not consistent, Aaron. It does feel like they're starting to – I guess what they're basically doing is they have Carlos Rodon to start, and he's still not back to the last year's level, but he's getting closer to it. They have Ryan Wilkins, who they really trust, at the back of their bullpen. They started in the game. He threw 5 no-hit innings against East Carolina. In between, they're kind of going to ride the hot hand is really how it feels for the NC State team. What's your take on those guys at this point?
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, I think you're right. Their pitching is still not it's not consistent. But, I mean, Brad Stone was good this weekend, and he's a guy they like. I mean, he's, you know, a left-hander, knows how to pitch, and got decent stuff. It's not going to blow you away. It's not Carlos Rodon.
Right.
But you know, he's a solid guy, and he pitched into the seventh inning this weekend. He's a key piece. I mean, but Ethan Ogbonn didn't get out of the third on Saturday, so I mean, it's still some of that going
Sounds
on too. But
familiar.
yeah, it does. But I mean, you know, they I don't know. I think when you put Turner back in that lineup, they're just a different team. And I think the star power with them, with Turner and Rodon, is special, and then that's what's going to carry them this year. You know, it's not that the supporting cast is bad. I would have felt a lot better about this team if they still had Danny Cannella. I mean, honestly, they missed that guy. He was a middle of the bat piece that just one extra, you know, older guy that can hit. I mean, it's a tough loss for them right before the season.
You're exactly right. I think we all thought, and I think NC State thought, that Brett Williams was going to be a little bit more of a factor than he has been, because he's an older guy. He's a fifth-year senior, that we thought that guy would come in and really be a bigger part of their offense than he has been. And I think we thought that, you know, they had older guys on the mound. They really do seem – another part that encourages me for NC State is Chris Overman, who was pretty good for them 2 years ago, then not so much last year. He seems to have gotten his mojo back a little bit at the back of that bullpen. Their depth in the bullpen and then the reemergence of Overman kind of allows them to deploy Wilkins a little bit more. It gives them a little bit more flexibility. And we'll kind of see how things go. But I do think they have some decent options, you know, on the mound. But I'd still feel better if Logan Jernigan was the guy that we thought he could be this year, and Ethan Ogbonn was as consistent as he was last year. He just hasn't. Those two things have not happened. Clemson, Aaron, has been, again, they kind of are who we thought they were, but their toughness really seems like it really comes through a little bit more for Clemson. Though. They won a series at NC State, and even though they lost series at North Carolina and at home to Virginia, they haven't gotten swept in those games, in any of those series. It just seems like this is a typical Jack Leggett toughness team, where the talent is a little bit younger, but seems like Clemson's starting to trend back upward. Not just this year, but the program starting to trend a little bit back upwards, where they've got some of that, where they're going to marry some of that Jack Leggett toughness to the talent level that we've become accustomed to seeing out of Clemson in the past.
Right, and I think they're, like you said, this team is still young. You know, their offense to me isn't. It's not great, you know, at this point. I mean, some of their younger guys, like Tyler Krieger, you know, Steven Duggar. I mean, they've kind of had their ups and downs. They're still learning, but they're very talented players. They're going to be good. Garrett Bolware has been really good for them this year. He's really been their best guy.
Yep.
But you know, some of the veterans like McGibbon and Baum, Wilkerson, those guys have been disappointing. You know, and even Thomas Brittle hasn't been great. I mean, it's just those were kind of the key veteran pieces that we thought they were going to rely on, and they haven't had very good years. You know, but they're still winning. You know, I do like their pitching. I don't love their pitching, but I like it. You're right; they're just kind of a gritty bunch. And you know, honestly, I don't love them as a top 25 team. But again, who's better? I mean, it's hard to find 25 teams more deserving. So. Here they are, you know, they're not, what are they, 9-6 in the ACC?
Yep.
Put them in there. Why not?
Hey, let's face it. We're ranking. We have two SEC teams with losing records in the conference, and Mississippi State and Ole Miss, 5-7 and 4-8 in the league. I mean, hey, we'd love to rank some Southeastern Conference teams too, but, you know, win some games. Kind of hard to, and again, kind of hard to rank, you know, a Texas A&M, poor Hemplo, that loses a series at home to Auburn this weekend. Yep. Kind of hard to rank Alabama when they lose a home to Arkansas, their first real test. Auburn, you know, 3-9 in the league, probably not going to rank. We ranked a 4-8 team, probably should rank a 3-9 as well. And then Florida, I mean, under 500 for the whole year. I know you had them in the NCAA tournament, you know, in the midseason update, Aaron. I'm with you there. Then you know, they were at Mississippi State, losing 2 out of 3 this weekend. They still have at Missouri. You still have Missouri, Tennessee, and Auburn, and Georgia on the schedule. I think it's fair to say those are the four least talented teams in the SEC. Is that the way to put it?
Yeah.
Definitely I would say that about Georgia, Tennessee, and not so much even the talent level. Missouri, just really young. But even all those teams, Missouri's got Zastrani, a tough left-hander on Friday night. And Aaron obviously had a little phone call there, and we have to wrap up the podcast before we go to the Google Plus Hangout. But just to kind of wrap that part up, it's tough at the back of the back of the rankings every week, Aaron. There are new teams, and like you said, that's kind of how you wind up with Campbell at the back. I mean, you're just looking for teams that are winning games, and Campbell's resume is as as useful as anybody else's, comparing them to like UC Arkansas, or we're just looking for teams that are winning games, and not a lot of teams are winning games that consistent matter this right now.
Right, and you know, I would feel better if Campbell had played better competition on weekends. I feel like it's hard to evaluate them without having seen them play again. I mean, top 25 caliber competition, but they have played some good midweek games. They beat East Carolina a couple of times. They
Duke
beat Duke
a couple of times.
Yeah, they lost NC State, but that's what they're hanging their hat on right now, is their overall record and those midweek wins against ACC teams. I mean, or rather one ACC team in East Carolina. But I mean, you know, this team they are older. Again, I mean, it's a lot of upperclassmen lineup. They can really run, disrupt you with the speed. Obviously, Ben McCown is kind of the centerpiece there from a speed standpoint. 35 steals and 37 tries or something. And the pitching, coming into the year, that was the question for Campbell. They lost, I think, 2/3 of their weekend rotation. But they pitched very well this weekend in a sweep of Presbyterian. And their pitching's been good for them. So, we'll see. I mean, I wish Campbell played Coastal Carolina this year. They don't. They miss them in the Big South schedule.
Right.
It's too bad. I still feel like, for some reason, I can't shake the feeling that Coastal is the team in that league until proven otherwise.
Can't imagine what would give you that thought. Yeah. Maybe the fact they've ruled that league for 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. So, but
we
got Campbell. Give him a shot. They're 28-5. Let's see what they can do with this thing. Nobody else wants to stay in the top 25.
That's it. So we went off the board a little bit. I felt like we went off the board earlier this year when we went with Central Arkansas. But they obviously had the series win at Mississippi State. But it's kind of hard to rank a team that's under 500 in its conference. Even though the Southland Conference is a good league and they're having a good year, they're under 500 in the league. It's just kind of hard to shake that. But Aaron, we'll come back with more on the Google Plus Hangout, obviously. But great stuff from you as always, and obviously Three Strikes, the chat, every Monday. College Monday's a pretty hectic day for Aaron Fitt. You're lucky to get as much Aaron Fitt as you get, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you that. And and Aaron and all of our season's college baseball podcasts are sponsored by Project Lomo, an innovative program designed to get young baseball fans around the country to channel their passion for the sport in creative ways to improve their community. We'll have more details later about Project Lomo when it's officially launched in early May. We want to thank Project Lomo for coming aboard as our college podcast sponsor. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.